Hello everybody, Dr. F. Scott Feel here, and I'd like to introduce you to our newest sponsor. The NPTE Final Frontier is the review course that I wish was around when I took the board exam. For those of you who know my story, it took me a handful of times to pass that exam, and quite frankly, I really wish I had an exam review course around, just like the NPTE Final Frontier. Check out their website, npteff.com, and use the code HET at checkout for 10% off to all of our listeners and fans. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. F. Scott Field, and I've got with us today Dr. Nicholas Rolnick. Some of you may know him from BFR Pros, All Things BFR, BFR World, BFR Unlimited, BFR. Everything BFR, this guy does it. So I'm excited to talk to him a little bit about that. But I want to start out, let's just talk a little bit, Nick, if you don't mind, about your educational journey, how it's kind of led you to where you're at today.
Well, first and foremost, thanks for having me on the podcast. I always enjoy enjoy speaking about BFR and especially this type of podcast where it's not necessarily as much about the science of BFR, but more about the journey and how I ended up there. So that's a nice refreshing change of pace for me. So thank you. Listen, I've always been into health and fitness, bodybuilding. Those are always things that I've found very rewarding because it's really, for my experience at least, one of the few things that if you work really hard and you push yourself, you will get results. I know people are all variable with their responses to exercise. I've been very fortunate to be a very strong responder. So I've always seen results. And so that's always been something that has driven me. It's like, oh, if I work hard, I'm going to get results. But that fitness interest started in high school. For wrestling and playing baseball, but mostly for wrestling. And wrestling is another one of those things. You know, you can try, you can work as hard as you possibly can, and you can still fail. But it's so rewarding and it teaches you a lot of life lessons. Never give up, persistence. And those are, you know, that along with echoing my experience in high school with playing baseball and really fighting for playing time throughout my high school experience, you know, kind of really reinforced that persistence and consistent work ethic. And that has laid the foundation for me as a practicing physical therapist and educator for how to get things done and not being satisfied with the status quo. And so, you know, I played college baseball, again, into fitness, all that other good stuff. But ironically, I never was able to observe physical therapy because I was never really super injured to the point where I needed to get referred. We had athletic trainers in high school, but also in college. So I never really was exposed to that area of of the fitness rehab continuum, I like to think about it, until after I graduated. And I partied a lot in college. Like, I was in a frat, obviously played college baseball, was the captain of my team, you know, all of that stuff. But I never really found my true calling and my passion because I always knew that I liked biology. I was a bio major when I graduated, but the diversity of biology, you know, on one class, I'd be studying marine biology, the other would be cellular. And it was just like, while there are common threads that link the disciplines or the sub-disciplines together, it was never something that I was like, wow, like I really love this. Like, this is something that I really, really enjoy. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't something where I was like, oh my God, it's a passion for me. And my grades kind of reflected that. I graduated with an under 3.0 GPA at Franklin and Marshall, which was really a feeder school for medicine. So the biology program and chemistry was very difficult as is. And not really having a passion for what I was doing, it just made it that much easier to just coast and not really apply myself. So then I graduated college, really didn't know what I wanted to do. I actually thought I wanted to do research proper, like cellular research. And I was interviewing for positions there in Philadelphia, for example. And You know, I also interned in a lab at New York Medical College in Valhalla, who also coincidentally has a DPT program, but really cellular based. And that really wasn't fulfilling to me, but it was almost like I was shoved into it because I didn't, you know, what can you do with a bio degree that you can't go to medicine? You can't really do anything with. And that was kind of what I was saddled with, along with debt from being in a private school. So it's like a very interesting situation, but being 21, 22, it's like, like it is what it is. My mom was like, you got to get a real job. You can't just come back here and coast. And so she found an ad on Craigslist for a physical therapy aide position. And I was like, oh, you like fitness? Oh, this could be, you know, good for you. So I went and I saw how a caring physical therapist within a good model of outpatient, out of network practice could make a significant impact on the lives of their patients beyond just, you know, injury, you know, reduction or rehabbing from an injury or, you know, whatnot, strengthening. And within 4 months, I knew that that was what I really wanted to do with my life and my career. And so I started to take post-bac classes at night after working full-time. At that point, you know, physics, chemistry, bio, like all those other post-bac classes, they were now a means to an end. And so I was able to apply myself a little bit more than I did in college. And at the same time, I knew that fitness was going to be some area of my practice. So I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to go get the CSCS. And that's what I did. I read the textbook forward and back 3 times and made a note stack, like hundreds, if not thousands of note cards stack. Because I was coming from nothing to then going to take the top training certification without any real background. But I did it. I passed the exam on my first try and then started a personal train along the way. That was back in 2011. But I recognized that even with my post-bac, my grades getting up, it really wasn't going to make me a competitive candidate, even though I had great recommendations from the physical therapist that I was working with and everything. And I saw then that, you know, in this model, the physical therapist is very, you know, is more than capable of helping people make positive health behavior decisions to not only improve their, you know, their rehabilitation, but also optimize their performance and their lifestyle in general. But unfortunately, having discussions with those physical therapists, DPT school was not, there was not enough bandwidth to talk about what I learned to be called health promotion. And so I said, you know what? That actually sounds pretty interesting. If I go get a master's degree and then learn some of the psychology and how to intervene in that psychology of why people make the health behavior changes or the health behavior decisions that they make and how we can circumvent that, you know, could be a very potent tool for intervention on not only a rehabilitative perspective, but also on a, you know, return to, you know, lifestyle and giving them what they need to be successful and mitigate chronic disease. So I went to American University in DC. I ended up getting a partial scholarship because I applied for a graduate assistantship. I was managing a gym, which also gave me a more back-end knowledge of supervising students, but at the same time dealing with, you know, the equipment issues with operating a gym, a student, you know, a student university gym, which was unbelievable the amount of headaches that was with that. But with that, part of my master's thesis was an internship, and I was able to internship with Division I strength coaches in volleyball, field hockey, and women's soccer, along with, you know, occasionally observing wrestling, among other sports. But those were really the main ones. And that gave me an appreciation for high performance application, being able to just be in the gym and observing how, you know, people are applying strength science. And at that point, I was really hooked and I knew that that's what I really wanted to do. So then I applied, I got into Columbia University. I'll never forget this. Columbia is one of the universities because it's private, which, you know, pros and cons, right? Pros are they're able to look at you more holistically, but cons are the debt, right? Which I did go, you know, even though I got a partial assistantship at American University, I was still paying and taking out loans. But that was just at that point a vehicle to get me to where I'm at. But anyways, I'll never forget, I was in the interview and I was really expressing my passion for physical therapy and how I just could see myself, you know, staying in New York because I was in DC at the time. And she basically, the professor offered me, she's like, listen, I don't tell this to anybody, but I'm going to recommend that you are admitted into the program based on our interview. She said, is there any other questions? And I said, well, you know, like money is always an issue. It's very difficult to then go to another private school. He said, is there anything else you can do? And she said, well, based on your grades, I can see if we can give you a scholarship, a partial scholarship, you know, like $7,000 a year or whatever off tuition, but you need to keep up a GPA of, I can't remember what the GPA was. And I was like, okay, great. Like, give me a chance and I'll do it. And yeah, so I did it. And then I went through PT school, but midway through PT school, this is now where I started to get interested in research. And now I found an area that I really wanted to focus on. And I reached out to a couple of physical therapists in New York because I wanted to shadow them, see how they're doing, operating. I knew I wanted to do a cash-based practice at a network practice. And one of them, the physical therapist that I reached out to was Brent Brookbush. He is the owner of the Brookbush Institute, an online healing movement science education platform that educates physical therapists, chiropractors, et cetera, and personal trainers on rehab-based interventions. So I started to shadow him. And at that point, he was saying, it came up about debt and about money and whatnot. And he said, well, I'm looking for somebody to help me with creating research reviews. Would you be interested in coming on, making like $100 or something per article? But that would help me and that would also help you and you know, get me through that. And so I said, absolutely. So this is about the second year in PT school that I started to work for him. And at the same time, I also saw the reemergence of blood flow restriction. So I used blood flow restriction briefly because I saw some bodybuilder when I was in DC. I saw some bodybuilder wrap something around their arms and was doing bicep curls. And at that point, I was a competitive bodybuilder. I was actually doing shows, bodybuilding shows. So unlike, you know, I was just like any other bodybuilder and basically anything to do with gains, I was like, sure. I saw that it wrapped it around. I tried it for a couple of weeks. I'm like, wow, this is pretty painful. I'm going to stop doing this. And then I just forgot about it until the second year in PT school where I saw like a couple, like one thing on ESPN with Dwight Howard. I saw another article on T Nation. Like there were just things that, you know, the timeline is kind of fluid, but generally speaking around that time. And at that point, I've already been in school for a little while and my perspective on strength training and stuff has evolved. And I started to look into the science and I was like, wow, this is actually looks pretty interesting. I think there might be some legs with this. So at that same time, I started to really read the research and then post on social media the research to kind of keep myself accountable, but to also open myself up to criticism and basically the harshest peer review that you can get, right? Like social media criticism about a topic. And that's what happened. I started to post on social media. People were like, this is a fad. This is like stupid. Like, why would you do this? Like dumb. But I use that to kind of shape how I would educate people on blood flow restriction training and started to grow a following on Instagram that way. And at the same time now, working with Brent, having him go through how to look at a research article, how to write up a research article, you know, structuring paragraphs. These are all things that he helped me with in my development as a writer in shaping, you know, that kind of passion. So I ended up writing like 36 articles for his website. and also assisted in a ton of other projects like mining research for different like dysfunctions that, you know, within his model that he's proposing, et cetera. So I got really comfortable with accessing research, reading research, looking for different gaps in the research in certain particular topics. And at the same time, really refining that with BFR. And then I developed a social media presence of people following me online. But I ultimately knew that I wanted to start contributing myself to the research, but I didn't have a vehicle to be able to do that until a couple years later, when there was a post on Facebook for an adjunct at Lehman in New York, where Dr. Brad Schoenfeld was at. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I would be amazing to be in a affiliated with a university where, you know, Brad is at, because, you know, I look up to him as one of the godfathers of hypertrophy science and as somebody who's very interested in building muscle. It seemed like an awesome fit. And this is already after I started to teach, because I had a master's degree, I was teaching online through my connection with Brent, who hooked me up with Concordia University. I started to teach online. So I was making money while I was actually a student teaching online because I had that master's degree. So it really helped me offload some of the burden that I was experiencing as a student. But anyways, I was looking to continue my teaching because I found it that was something that I really did enjoy. And I ended up coming on board at Lehman. And the goal was, you know, at some point I wanted to ask Brad, hey, you're already in the research and you've already published at least one or two papers with blood flow restriction training in the past. How can I get on, you know, this publishing bandwagon to start? And that kind of deaded for a couple months. And then he approached me. I can't remember if it was October or something along those lines, like basically a month or two after I started. And he's like, well, I just want to let you know that they're doing a bodybuilding specific issue at the Strength and Conditioning Journal through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. And I'm on the editorial board, and I know you're very interested in BFR, and you've used it, you know, with your clients, but also on you. And, you know, there's just a lot of potential to write this article, because at that point it was 2019. I've been out of PT school for 2 years. So I was using BFR with people. So I had a lot of experience in working with bodybuilders as well. So I was like, sure. And that's how I got my first foray into the research, where we ended up writing a massive article that got cut into two different articles, of which one was actually made open access because it was so widely requested. So I didn't even have to pay for it, which is super cool. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of how my research journey started. And then I kind of got into the point where when you know, my biology teacher, I'll never forget this, in college at Franklin and Marshall, he said, cause it was a project that he was proposing. Right. And he was like, yeah, I want you to think about a topic, and then I want you to really, you know, like propose what you would do. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is so difficult. Like, how do I know what's been done and what hasn't been done? And he goes, when you're into a field and you have a niche and you, or niche, can't remember how to, you know, say that, you're going to know where the literature is lacking. And that only comes with reading hundreds of papers to understand where the gaps are. And so this is a challenging assignment for you, because you guys are not going to be experts. You're going to have to look to see, all right, what's the gap? And I remember thinking, that's malarkey. That's crazy. Like, nothing can happen that way. But then I started to really, like, as I've read hundreds of blood flow restriction training papers, I started to think back and think, wow, like that's legit. Like, that actually does happen. And so I started to understand where the gaps were. And then with my social media presence, that parlayed into international recognition with other researchers that are looking for people to help them write their projects, because English is a second language for them, right? And they need some help with somebody who's knowledgeable, but also can write. And that literally started my research career. And so now through those collaborations, I've now grown into not just being a manuscript, like a person that goes through and rewrites the manuscript, make it flow, whatever, which is some of the stuff that I was doing for Brent. But now I've been consulted to design projects and that specifically aid in helping address the gaps in the research. And what's the cool thing about this whole thing is, you know, and I've talked to researchers about this. It's like, you never know what the journal that you're submitting to is looking for. So I ended up designing a study that was looking at the effects of autoregulation. And for those that are not familiar with blood flow restriction training, you have a cuff on your limb, it's inflated to a pressure. And then some of the devices that are able to modulate that pressure as you contract your muscle. So, you know, there's a lot of marketing that goes behind the BFR. And so I wanted to dissociate the marketing from the science. So I designed a study that was specifically looking at autoregulation, and it got rejected actually at Frontiers. But now we're in the final stages where we're waiting on the revisions, but we are this close to being accepted at BJSM, which is the top journal in sports science. So I say that because, you know, all credit to the first author, Edward Jacobs in Ghent. There was another international collaboration, but he really reframed the paper. But yeah, I mean, it's just the whole thing is crazy because of all this kind of spurred from a lot of these different events and the long, you know, my long journey to get to where I'm at. But ultimately, what I recognize out of all of this is, you know, I enjoy treating patients. I enjoy helping them get back to the activities that they love as quickly as possible. And blood flow restriction training just happens to be one of those modalities that I use that's evidence-based, that's not a fad, that is quickly approaching mainstream, and that's driven by physicians that are noticing the beneficial effects that BFR is having on their patients and their patients' post-surgical recovery. So it's like, it's all coming, you know, full circle. And now I'm able to understand that, you know, I do want to maintain some semblance of a clinical practice, but at the end of the day, I really enjoy teaching. And this is saying nothing about my journey with the BFR pros and what I've been doing with that, but I really enjoy teaching and I really enjoy challenging the students to understand, you know, or to challenge their own thought processes. And so that's why, you know, for me, the next step is getting a PhD. And it just so happens that that Brad Schoenfeld has just applied for a PhD program at Lehman, the same university that I teach for. So not only will I be able to stay in the city, but I might be able to actually keep some caseload as I'm a student with state tuition or faculty waiver, you know, whatever. So I'm trying to be more cost conscious moving forward, because the debt is, you know, that is a significant issue. But yeah, I mean, that was a very long, journey, but my journey is long. I mean, right. It's something I can just, you know, cut in 2 to 3 minutes. It is a long, long journey.
Right. Well, you touched on a lot of things during that journey. I want to kind of just go back and review. First off, I remember that Dwight Howard episode on ESPN. I remember seeing that and thinking, huh, that's interesting. I wonder if it's going to be a PT thing or if it's an athletic trainer thing or personal trainer type strength and conditioning coaches. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, but that's a really interesting thought. You know, I remember it vividly. I was just, you know, crazy to see how much it's grown since then. But I can definitely relate to you on the non-traditional winding path and journey. I was an English major, right? So I had to take a lot of those post-bac courses after I graduated because, you know, didn't have a lot of the prereqs as an English major. So it took about a year and a half of math and science courses just to get into PT school. So I hear you on that one. But, you know, you've had a lot of experience to this point now, both inside and outside of academia, right? And some parts of your journey really kind of helped frame the path, it sounds like now, for research and publishing, right? I hate research with a passion. I thought once I finished my dissertation, I am done. I am never doing research again. I didn't even think I was going to teach, right? Now, fast forward a couple of years and COVID hits and you know, I have the opportunity to teach full-time instead of work clinically. And I made that transition and I've come to love it, right? I love teaching and I love educating. And much like you, like I like, you know, pushing the envelope a little, making the students kind of critically think and you know, kind of challenge their own biases and challenge their own thought processes a little bit to figure out, you know, hey, if this doesn't work out, what's another possibility, right? What am I missing here? What could I help bring in? What's another avenue? What's another aspect? How else could we look at this and frame this, right? So I think that's part of seeing the light bulb moments, right? Just seeing them kind of get it, having it click. I really do enjoy that.